I am Laura Chahalsky. Welcome to the Finding Balance in Your Business, Career, Finances, Health, and Life podcast. Today, we are thrilled to have Deb Timmerman as our special guest. Thanks for being here, Deb.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much. We're so glad to have you back. I know you're a part of our Stress Relief series and did a great job helping healthcare providers, and I know you'll give some great tips again today. Deb Timmerman is our special guest, and she is the Chief Resilience Officer for Deb Timmerman and Associates, a company helping people prepare for, recover from, and adapt in the face of stress, challenge, or adversity. This is very timely, Deb. She's also a registered nurse. She specializes in tools and strategies for rapid stress relief, burnout prevention, navigating change, preventing and thriving after childhood trauma. And you have many different certificates and a lot of different training. And it's so great to have you here today. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks.
Thanks for being here. So tell us a little bit about how did you transition from, you obviously did a lot of nursing service, thank you for that, over the years, to being a HeartMath trainer?
Yeah, so I was leading nursing teams, the interdisciplinary team. I spent most of my career in geriatrics and hospice. Okay. And part of having a building that operated well in a team that was able to bring good service meant that we had to take care of our people. So I started down that road, really looking to help my team members be their best when they came to work. And the transition was, I wasn't really spending a lot of time on developing myself, even though I was learning these things, able to teach them. And I taught stress management skills for a number of years and used like meditation and Tai Chi and some of the more mind-body kinds of modalities. My practice was deepened when I started to use HeartMath training and programs for my own use. And I noticed such a difference in the way I was able to show up, the way I felt, how much energy I had. I just made the decision that that was a missing piece. Mm-hmm. What I love so much about the tools is they're tools that you use all throughout the day to help manage. So at the end of the day, after I worked a full day, I still had a lot of energy to come home and have a great life after.
Wow. And then
most of my energy was left at whatever facility I was at for the day.
Yeah, which is so good. Now, before we get into a little bit more about like the past stressors, what are some tools that they can use? I know we talked a little bit about it during the Stress Relief series, but what are some adaptive tools you found that you use during the day as a nurse that healthcare providers, when they're dealing with all these COVID patients and other patients, can use to kind of keep the energy at night so they can be present for their family and friends in the evening?
Well, HeartMath tools are great for that because they are things that you can use on the go, and they're mostly around work. And the base breathing tool, which is called focused breathing, is a favorite of mine, and I was not using that at the time. But even practicing things like the pause before you go in to see a patient, or taking that moment to regroup yourself, not just running from thing to thing, but really bringing your best energy forward. I mean, that's really what it's all about.
Okay. And I remember from the Stress Relief series, you talked about the focused breathing. Is that where you're trying to find that heart, I think you had said brain connection, just kind of feeling your heartbeat, but not necessarily doing deep breaths like I've heard other people do it. It's just, is it more like normal breathing, but you're trying to find that connection?
Yeah. So it's focusing your attention in the area of your heart and imagining your breath is flowing in and out of your heart space while you're breathing in through your nose, out through your mouth, just finding a slow, comfortable, easy rhythm. So more information is sent to the brain than by the heart than the brain sends to the heart. So it's actually opposite of what we think. Okay. So if we can change the way we breathe, we can influence the way the brain receives those signals.
Oh, cool.
So stopping those energy drains and helping us get to that calm, but yet what we call coherent space. So it's like an active state of calm.
That's awesome.
Meditation, I tend to be more in that parasympathetic space where I'm tired and sleepy and really downregulated. And that's great, but that doesn't work in a patient relationship, right?
Right. Yeah.
So the reason I love that one is it allows me to have the same benefits, mm-hmm. but to be in that present moment and be using all of my energy.
Which is good. Yeah, you're right. Because especially if you were ever dealing with or people that are in the emergency room, they have to be able to act quickly, right? And be have that sympathetic yes. nervous system working for a little bit. But I totally agree with you. You can't have the sympathetic nervous system working all the time, right? You have to have the parasympathetic as well in there and being able to relax. Well, this is so interesting. And now today we want to talk a little bit more about like how past stressors, because I know you have different trauma certifications, how that can affect someone's current life, you know, current well-being. Can we talk a little bit more about that, how it can impact them?
Sure. So as far as previous stressors and the effect on our well-being, we know that the brain starts to wire at birth, and it's based on our ability to adapt to our environment and our caregivers. So the brain is taking in information, processing that, and sending that information out and building those solid neural pathways. And there's a huge body of research around adverse childhood experiences. So there was a study done in 1999, and mm-hmm. what found out was that early life adversity, things like abuse, neglect, mm-hmm. And household dysfunction mm-hmm. really impact the way we develop. And if our brain develops in that way that's not adaptive, more in a maladaptive way, it does lead to social, emotional, physical issues. And those are so connected to some of the reasons that our patients show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We tend to look at what's wrong with them. We don't mm-hmm. ask what happened to them. And sometimes
interesting.
The story is such an important part of where they're at and a big piece of why they have all these physical issues.
That's so interesting, because you might get a patient that, you know, whether it's emergency room or whether it's a family doctor that they saw the patient last week and they're back again. And then they're thinking, okay, well, you seemed fine physically, but what's going on mentally? So is that where you would suggest, I'm sure healthcare providers do this, but would you suggest that they even dig maybe a little bit deeper about maybe the story and try to find, how do you get into that conversation without, saying, have you ever had trauma or past, you know, issues?
Well, many offices now are using a trauma screen of some type.
Oh, okay. Okay.
To talk about what went on in the past, particularly in pediatrics. Mm-hmm. So look at those things earlier along that developmental stage and try to intervene and support those families early mm-hmm. so we can reduce that load and give them the tools that they need to cope, grow, develop. And we know that just being able to show up for a kid and making feel safe has a huge impact on that ability to adapt in a positive way. So supporting those parents and bringing in those tools or teaching mm-hmm. them how to get themselves in the space that they could be present for that child is huge.
Oh yeah. That could affect their whole life, right?
Yes.
Because their past story, I mean, our past stories are part of our life, right? But it doesn't have to be the whole story going, the future story, right? It can be part of it. You can take it along, right? Maybe accept it and then kind of move on and heal, don't you think?
Yes. And so for me, I heard about that study in 2011 mm-hmm. at Holistic Nursing Conference. Mm-hmm. And it was as if somebody gave me this big missing piece to who I was and why I looked at stress the way I did. Mm-hmm. So just acknowledging that that was a role, played a role, was helpful in not only me developing more coping strategies mm-hmm. and healing, but also in how I dealt with or looked at the people that were our patients.
Yeah.
Because I tend to be judgmental instead of showing up for them in a compassionate, mm-hmm. open way. And sometimes that's what they need.
Exactly. Just someone to listen to them, right? And say,
our staff, you know, some of them have lots of stuff going on in their life, and for them to get to work on any given day is a big challenge.
Right.
So being able to support them in that way, mm-hmm. more trauma informed, or with a more trauma informed, mm-hmm.
which is really cool. Are you seeing more and more healthcare practices kind of looking at that, the trauma that maybe they're being trauma informed or looking at that with their staff, or is that something newer that you're working on?
So in Michigan, it's newer. We've been active about 3 years with educating, but it is growing. And in my own county, I live in Barry County in Michigan, we have a trauma council, and we're actually educating healthcare and businesses and all different kinds of people in our community to have that lens.
That's awesome. That's amazing. And I love what you're talking about, being there to support your patients when they have, you know, past issues that maybe could be coming up in physical symptoms, and trying to kind of go past and help them heal. But then I also love how you're talking about the providers and the, you know, healthcare managers and healthcare leaders, the administrative staff. How can they, I think you'd mentioned the importance of them having social support for their providers. What are there other ways besides just listening to them that they can be socially supportive, you know, to providers that may have had trauma or stressors in the past?
Yeah, I think just acknowledging that we all have to do our own work, mm-hmm. and we do hard things as healthcare practitioners. So people can show up in our lives that often will trigger us to have memories and things that, you know, we relive some of our past through our. So being in a good space with that and knowing when you need to get outside support yourself, mm-hmm. using these kinds of tools so that you don't get into that space where you have no energy and you're in that burnout cycle. And, you know, we've all been there at some time in our career, I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I used to have a chronic burnout cycle from one to the next. Mm-hmm. And until I learned how my past stressors shaped that, I couldn't break it. So that awareness is key.
Do that. And then could it also be where the healthcare leaders or hospitals have people come in, like right now with COVID, they talk about the fact that healthcare providers are more stressed than they ever have been. I had my daughter yesterday at the ER on a side note for a concussion, and it was in a local hospital, and they said, well, it's going to be a 2-hour wait today. And it was, but then the day before it was 4 hours. And so that's just, I mean, what they're dealing with and what is just crazy right now with all the, and I saw people coming in, you know, at a 5 o'clock shift, and I asked them about it, and she's like, oh yeah, they were coming in to help. That's not a normal 5 o'clock come in. It's normally 7 to 7. So she's like, they were coming in to help. I'm like, wow, just what heroes they are, you know, with what they're dealing with. So when you talk about, could they have like in services or mental health experts coming in to talk to them, would that help as well? Like to the whole hospital or that practice?
Absolutely. And I think what we found is that having those tools to use throughout the day, mm-hmm. things that they can do, like the HeartMath skills, make a huge difference. So HeartMath is used in many different hospitals across mm-hmm. The world. And it's also used in the military.
Okay. So
when we think about showing up at our best and having all of those demands on our time, we really want to be our best and being able to use our thinking brain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when we're stressed and we're not in that space, it also leads to errors and mm-hmm. kinds of other things that happen because we are dealing with people's lives. So maintaining exposure and that clear thinking is mm-hmm. very, very important.
Which is good. So I suppose that could lead to doing the heart. You said the pause maybe before they go into the next patient room, and then maybe try to do the heart before maybe they start a shift. Would you say maybe do some of the HeartMath breathing just to kind of get focused, or in between patients? I know that a lot of times they're running in between, but.
Yes, all of the above. And sometimes I will do it in the morning. Mm-hmm. So I am fully charged for the day. Mm-hmm. But when I used to work healthcare and was doing that crazy shift kind of work, you come home and you can't unwind. So typically sleep is one of the big things that is a problem for people. Yeah. So using it before you go to bed and being able to wind down, we talked about the parasympathetic mm-hmm. activation. Think about these tools as putting you in nervous system neutral. So it's equivalent of a computer reboot, control alt delete.
Yeah.
You can kind of get rid of all that junk, recharge. I mean, I sleep. That was the first thing I started to use it for was active sleep. And what I noticed is I got really good sleep. So I was much thinking the next day and continued that practice, it only got better. Now, does that mean I never have trouble sleeping? No, if I drink coffee at 10 p.m.,
right,
sleep. But for the most part, I wake up in the morning and I'm raring to go. And I can't say that it's been that.
That's amazing. Well, yeah, because it does, like you said, it does kind of reactivate your nervous system, lets it all rest. And if you don't have sleep, which a lot of them, if they're doing, you know, different swing shifts and overnight shifts, they might not have that, but then it's important to sleep when they can, right?
Yes.
So So I could see how like sleep and the heart math leads to resilience. Are there other ways that you see that all of these tools helping them to be more resilient? You know what I mean? Through the stressors that they may have previously looked at.
Yeah. So all these tools help build our capacity. And I like to use the cell phone analogy. When our cell phone starts to get, the battery goes down a little bit and it's getting to 70% and 50%, we are running around looking for a plug.
Right.
Because we know it operates best when it's fully charged.
Right.
That's the same thing for us. Mm-hmm. When our batteries are fully charged, we can make better decisions. We have more energy, and that decreases the wear and tear, and that helps build our internal resilience.
Okay. So
what we look for in for resilience, from my perspective, is we are going to have ups and downs in lives and changes in our schedule, an influx of patients. But how can I level that out so that my ride on my body is more smooth? It's not like I'm riding a huge wave and then falling off and trying to battle back up.
Right.
It takes out those highs and lows, and it takes out the emotional intensity, so we can operate from a different space.
I love that. So you said, I couldn't hear you for a second there. You said takes out highs and lows. And then what was the other part about it?
So the remote emotional reactivity.
Oh, that's perfect.
So we often run from that emotional space. And you know, when you're in that place of worry, battery getting depleted. Yeah, it is. And there's actually science behind that. So when we can stay in neutral or on the more positive side of the grid, we can actually shift the chemistry in our body. And that's how it works, to more renewing hormones versus cortisol and adrenaline, which wear us down.
Which is so neat. So you see then the heart math tools, the pause. Is it also when you're maybe they're on an off shift or before, after work, where they're doing like calming, relaxing things or hobbies?
Yeah, you can use it anytime. So that base technique is really the base technique. There are things for problem solving, communication, getting into that coherent space by adding a regenerative emotion. So a whole series of things and applications, which make for a really robust toolbox. The beauty of it is that no one knows you're doing it, because it's something that you learn to do on the fly. So you have lots of control if you teach your body to do that. And it's pretty easy to do.
Just kind of focus on your breathing, right? And then take time and pausing and yeah, I think it's right, because then I think it allows you to stay more in the present moment, right? Versus focusing on the last patient. Obviously, you take good care of each patient, but instead of worrying about the last patient when you're going to the next patient, try to focus on the next one you're seeing and know that you did everything you could for the last one, correct?
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I used to experience when I was at that bedside, I lost so much time thinking about in my head what I needed to do next.
Okay.
I was much slower at my tasks because I was in that headspace. Oh my gosh, you know, that constant prioritization.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But when you can be in that more coherent state, that comes logically to you and you don't waste so much energy.
Just so neat. It just sounds like a great change from, you know, people running around being more stressed out to just being calmer. Almost like we're never completely in control of our day, but it sounds like if you're in control of some of your thoughts, you can handle what's thrown at you throughout the day, correct?
Yeah, you actually are in control of your physiology, if you will, because you can make these choices and moment-to-moment changes as you notice that stress is cropping up or that you're running out of energy.
I love that. And the cell phone analogy you mentioned was really good. It's interesting. So now you also talk about like the stress lens and that importance of that. Can you talk a little bit more about the stress lens and how it affects healthcare providers' well-being and balance?
Sure. So we typically see stress as a negative thing, and stress is not negative. Stress is a good thing. It's how we know when we don't have the resources to cope with the demands for change that we're constantly being asked for. And we typically ignore that information and we push it down. So rather, using your stress lens in a positive way, it's using that information so that you can make a choice and use a tool and an intervention to shift out of that. And I would would also say to that, our stress lens is also another aspect of it is our perception and how we view and see the world.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're in that already excited state,
mm-hmm.
brain is on that more sympathetic course, it skews how we perceive things.
Mm-hmm.
And it can cause problems for us. So we call let me restate that. Retraining your stress lens to see things from a place of coherence allows you to get that emotional charge out of it and to look at the problem for what it is, not being influenced by maybe past stressors, things that happened in your childhood. We all hear of triggers.
Right.
Now, what do we get triggered by? We've all had that patient that pushed our button and we don't understand why. And typically when we talk about that, it's something that happened a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But at that moment, I'm trying to sort through everything and my brain goes to, ooh, danger, danger. I kind of remember something like that.
Okay. So is that when you take a minute when you're having that moment with your stress lens? And because you said you wanted to operate from a place of coherence, correct? Is that correct?
Yes. So when we use heart math training tools, think about them in a fashion where we would prep to train. Mm-hmm. That's the stress lens. So we would use these tools to help build our body up so that we could be more in that present moment, clear thinking space. And then from the perspective of resetting, when I get off course and I'm starting to feel stress come up, I can now reset because I'm clued in to the stress and I can choose that tool.
Okay. So it's when you feel like that moment, is that when you kind of focus on your breathing and that can allow you to adapt? Is that, or is it different than that? Is it more of a thought change?
It's a yes and. So
okay.
Both. So sometimes I'll use those skills before I'm doing something. Like today, it was a hectic morning. I've been doing all kinds of things so that I can be in this present space. Mm-hmm. I did a couple of minutes before we hopped on our call.
Okay.
And now if something came up midway through the day, I would call that. I would do it again.
Okay.
So yeah, it's prepping to make sure that you're fully charged using those tools in a planned way, but then also as things crop up so that you can reset.
That's amazing. Yeah, it seems like a great idea. And it's a lot of times they talk about with yoga and meditation, and I could see with heart math, do it before you need it, right? So, because you never know when something you're going to get stuck in traffic, or for healthcare providers, you're going to have a stressful, you know, encounter with the patient or anything. And so if you can kind of prepare yourself, your body's better to adapt right during that moment, which makes sense.
Yeah. And you may not have an hour to do yoga every day of the week.
Right.
So it's a beautiful fit to whatever else you're doing because it fills in the gaps in between.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, heart math seems amazing because you can do it, like you said, on the fly very, very quickly. So last question before we talk about your website, you had talked about how healthcare managers, healthcare leaders can help kind of their staff mitigate stress to have kind of a better outlook. What are some tools for that? We talked a little bit more about, you know, social stress, maybe having people come in and do, you know, mental health in services and asking your team how they're doing. What else can they do to help mitigate the stress?
So speaking from my past experience,
yeah.
Modeling the behavior that you want to see is the most important piece.
Okay.
So you're taking good care of yourself as a leader and you're demonstrating these tools to your staff. I think that's the biggest influencer. It's not, you know, do as I say, but do as I do. Walk alongside them.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously in leadership, you're going through crazy times too.
Right.
The demands are different, but mm-hmm. you have to respond as well as they do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can speak to your staff from that more connected place, that's big. You know, they're willing to do lots of things for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's that connection, not just the turning down of information.
Which makes sense. So then it's the leaders kind of modeling the self-care that maybe they take on themselves and then also teaching their employees to make sure that they're not only focusing on their patients, but also on themselves, right?
Yes.
This is good. That was a great answer. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for being here. Is there a website where we can find you?
Yeah. Lessstressinlife.com is my website.
Okay. Love that. Well, thank you for being here. It's been wonderful to talk to you as always, and you've given us so many wonderful tools. And I really think this will help healthcare practices and the leaders to really make sure they're supporting their teams, but also their patients. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.